This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopian Media and Online Broadcasting Services' Peak Oil Global Warming Channel. We're about to speak to Bryant Urstadt, who has just written the cover story for the August 2006 issue of Harper's Magazine called A World Without Oil, Scenes from a Liberal Apocalypse. Welcome to Peak Oil Global Warming Channel.
Thank you.
Tell us just a little bit about Harper's, its illustrious history, its demographics, its place in the American intellectual firmament.
Well, I'm not an expert on Harper's, but it has been around for about 150 years, and I think it mainly appeals to people who really, really, really like to read, which is maybe not the largest segment of people in the U.S.
Would you say it includes a disproportionate number of policy and opinion makers in the U.S.?
I don't know whether I could say that, but I do think it includes a lot of people who care about that.
Okay. Tell us about the origins of this article. Did you bring it to them, or did they come to you?
No, I brought it to them. It was something I'd been interested in for a while. I don't know how much background you want, but essentially, yeah, I brought it to them.
Okay. And how much work went into the story in terms of research?
Well, you know, probably more than 18 months of reading and thinking about it. That doesn't mean that's the amount of time I spent typing at the keyboard, but
right.
It started before I even pitched it, writing another piece for MIT's Technology Review about a book called The Long Emergency, and that's when I really started to look into the issue.
Okay, and did you have the idea of educating people about the issue, debunking the issue, just sort of bringing people up to date on what's happening with it, or what was your...
No, I was personally interested in it, and I felt that it was important to other people as well, which a writer always hopes for, but I was personally interested in the topic, and I read this book, The Long Emergency, which paints a very scary scenario of the future, starting pretty much now. Essentially, I don't know how familiar readers are with the book or how much detail I should go into about that, but
tell us who wrote it.
By James Kunstler, and basically it asserts that we've hit peak oil and the oil is about to become much scarcer and much more difficult to get, and lots of terrible things are going to ensue. Like a lot of people who read the book, I was kind of unnerved. I happened to write for MIT's Technology Magazine from time to time, and I wanted to essentially test his conclusions, which is, can alternative technologies pick up the slack for oil, if in fact oil is a depleted or depleting resource?
Just in summary, what did you find?
Well, I basically found that he's a little too grim, in my opinion, on the capabilities of alternative technology and also on human nature in general and our ability to get ourselves out of sticky situations.
Okay. Tell neophytes to the area who H. King Hubert was and what he had to say about peak oil.
Well, he was a geologist, and he developed a way of guessing when a field or, by extension, a group of fields would reach the peak of production, and he was very right about it for at least the United States production. And in 1956, he drew a curve, and he said U.S. production will peak in about 1971, and from there on, we'll get less and less oil every year. And then he went...
How accurate was he?
He was dead on.
Yeah, okay.
He was dead on, which makes him very hard to ignore.
And what kind of reception did he get when he made his predictions?
You know, at the time, people, I'm not totally sure exactly what everyone had to say, but there were certainly a lot of people who said, this is not likely and we don't buy it.
And the basis of that...
But there may have very well been other people who were aware of that.
Right. And the people who poo-pooed it, on what grounds did they poo-poo it?
Well, I mean, oil is a pretty speculative science, as far as I can tell, and they simply believe there was more.
Okay.
They saw that there was a lot of oil coming out, and they didn't feel that they were anywhere near hitting the top.
Okay, now using more or less the same methods that he used, what have others been saying about global oil production? And before you talk about that, talk about the difference between peak oil and running out of oil and the significance
of... Well, peak oil simply means that we've hit the absolute... highest level of production that we will ever hit. And Hubbard saw this as a curve. Some other people argue that it's more of a plateau that goes on for quite a long time. That's a big debate, and I don't know the answer. But a curve seems perfectly reasonable to me. When you hit that number, you begin to get a little less each year.
And what impact does that have on price and availability of
well,
oil?
Well, once demand starts to outstrip supply, it will hypothetically have a huge effect on price. Now, that depends very much on whether efficiency gains can be made and whether alternative technologies can come into fruition quickly enough.
Right. Now, in terms of what we've been experiencing lately with the escalating price of crude oil and the escalating price of gasoline, is that in itself a good indicator that the peak has been reached?
I personally don't think so. We're getting a little bit out of my field in terms of we're getting into sort of a serious global economics.
Right.
What I did was studied more the particular theories of peak oil and the people, also the people who were interested in it.
Okay, well
that became an interest of mine.
Okay, let's get to that. But then I want to come back to the relationship between the people who are into it and the theory itself. What did you do in terms of? It sounds like almost participant observation to find out what the peak geeks are up to.
Well, I read a lot of the books. The internet is an awesome resource for people who are interested in peak oil. Almost, you know, maybe too much so. I mean, you type in peak oil on Google, and you will just be overwhelmed with a tidal wave of information.
Right.
Which you can spend many hours reading, and I did. And then I took it to the next step, which is I started going to one of the meetup groups, which there are many. I think there's more than 100.
Right.
The one in New York has. At the time, had about 120 members. Now has about 350.
They have to stagger the meetings, or they all meet together, or how?
Well, you know, they have a lot of members, but not everyone shows up. But
right.
They're getting. When I was visiting, they were getting about 30 people.
Okay, and what was the time period when you were attending these meetings?
Well, June, July, August of last year.
Okay,
and went to one in September.
Okay, and did you go to just New York or all over the country?
I
or
went
what?
To one in January too. No, I just sort of started peeking in on the. New York group, but I also did go to a conference,
right.
Which had members from these groups all over the country, which was held in Yellow Springs,
okay.
Ohio.
And what did you discover at these meetings? Did you go there sort of as a peak oil person or as a reporter covering the story or what?
No, I wanted to write about it, but
right.
I was also personally interested.
Okay.
I did sort of, when people asked, I said, you know, I personally don't think that the collapse is imminent, but
right.
I do want to discuss, I do want to learn from you guys what your opinion about it is, and I do think that there is some serious energy issues. And it was an amazing experience because these people were are amazingly informed about every kind of facet of the energy industry.
Right.
So it was a pleasure to sit there and just listen to them mainly, but also ask some questions.
Okay. You spoke of the catastrophe as kind of either with a big or a little C, it just is kind of part of the discussion. What's the catastrophe?
Well,
I think it's
a huge C. They expect, when the oil begins to run out, they expect a lot of things. They expect economic panic, joblessness on a huge scale. They expect enormous difficulties moving goods around the country, enormous difficulties getting people around the country, which are sort of the two basic pillars of society these days.
Right.
They expect global warming also to sort of kick in simultaneously, particularly as we switch toward increasingly toward coal, which is a very dirty way of getting energy.
Right, which is seen as inevitable when the oil runs out. We have to switch to coal.
Yes.
And coal is very dirty, and that would accelerate global warming.
Exactly. They're very worried about that.
Right.
They are worried about disease, although I never quite understood exactly how disease would be a factor, or I should say I've forgotten the explanations, but it's something that is a concern.
Well, it's interesting. I did an interview yesterday, and it's posted near this, that about the impact of peak oil on the healthcare system and on health through unemployment and other stresses that you've just mentioned.
Well, of course, yeah, the healthcare system consumes a huge amount of economic resources, and
right.
without those, they're worried about a general breakdown of that. And
right.
a big one, of course, is food.
Right.
They're really very worried about how we're going to... We've sort of developed a world where we have food grown very far from where it's eaten, particularly in the Western world. And they are very worried that the corn won't get to New York and the tomatoes won't get to Las Vegas or whatever.
Hence the movement for relocalization. Tell people what relocalization is.
That is rebuilding a model of a world where things that happen locally, essentially, that you grow your food locally, you trade locally, you get most of your goods and services from people who live very, very close to you.
Essentially the way the world was before the petroleum revolution.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very, it's really looking backward.
When the population was a sixth of what it is now.
Exactly, and the nice thing about, the interesting thing about it is it's both a nice vision and a scary vision. It can be both sort of Mad Max and also a sort of an Edenic, you know, civilian farmer soldiers type, you know, Jeffersonian world too.
Right. Now, what was your take on the people you talked to, both in terms of their intellectual capability and their emotional state?
They ran a pretty wide spectrum. I would say all of them were easily excited by ideas, if that's any kind of a useful generalization.
Right.
But there were cool heads and there were hot heads and every stripe in between. But essentially, yes, they were very passionate people and got moved by this idea in a way that maybe some people might be a little bit more resistant to the power of ideas.
They're sort of early adopters, in a way, of this
idea.
Well,
they are. They may turn out to be, yeah.
Now, what's your evaluation of the soundness of their analysis and the soundness of their prescription for dealing with the problem?
Well, you know, I think all of their ideas are sound, but I think they may not be right. And it's predicting the future is a matter of opinion at some point. They personally don't feel... For instance, Kunstler argues we don't have as much coal as everyone says we do.
Right.
I have, as far as I can tell, he's the only person that I was able to find who really thinks that, who I would take seriously.
And, right.
Most people seem to argue that we have an absolute ton of coal, and I believe that. So I'm really not worried that we're not going to have enough coal, for instance.
But there is a problem that if it's dirty and it's burned, it'll affect global warming to a certain extent.
Well, again, then you also have to be cynical about ideas for carbon sequestration.
Right.
And other ways of possibly, burning coal a little bit cleaner than we do now, and in addition to general efficiency gains. Remodeling the world a little bit to live within the new constraints if they in fact happen. You know, maybe we have more trains.
So is the idea that the apocalyptic vision that they're painting is something to for everyone to be seriously worried about, or is it kind of part of a dialectic that by presenting a worst case scenario, enough moderate changes will take place to avoid it?
I don't think they're presenting a worst case scenario in order to scare people into action. I think that they have looked at the facts and this is what they think is going to happen.
Could you compare the debates over global warming and the peak oil in terms of the emergence of the idea, the poo-pooing of it, the movement to support it, and the response of the current U.S. government to either or both of these ideas?
Well, I think you can draw some comparisons. I find global warming in general more convincing than the apocalyptic peak oil scenarios, but they are both certainly growing in terms of how agreeable people find them or how believable people find them. I think global warming is way ahead and probably rightly so. But they also are tied in together to a large extent. So.
Okay, now you explicitly compare in the title and to some extent in the piece this idea of a peak oil apocalypse with the rapture apocalypse.
Well, you know,
and American millenarianism in general. Say something about that.
I found that there were a lot of similarities. First of all, this is not the first time that we have, as a society, or that there has been a strain of thought that argues that resources are on the wane and that catastrophe will soon follow. It's got a fairly long history.
Not to mention a lot of cartoons in The New Yorker saying the end is near.
Yes, well, the Get Ready Man, of course,
right.
is a
staple of American culture.
Old, reliable, yeah,
right.
And one I like.
Right.
But, you know, Lord Kelvin, who came up with the theory of entropy, really was pretty high on the idea of the sort of the heat death of the universe and
right.
The general winding down of everything, and this is an idea that's Malthus, of course, was big on this. This is an idea that's been around and recurs with varying strength, but, you know, Soylent Green is a sort of a more recent example of this kind of idea of a devastated future where we've ruined the world environmentally and used up all of our resources.
Or even Weekend by Godard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so... I mean, you can come up with a lot of them. And as I'm sort of paying attention to this and talking about this with people, there's more and more. Alas, Babylon is one I haven't read, but someone was mentioning to me the other day.
Alas, Babylon, that's about a nuclear
it is, but
collapse.
It people do devolve into this kind of a relocalized state.
Right.
Working, living on their way, by their
way. If I'm not mistaken, we can give a plug for the film, the TV series Jericho, which is going to be a ripoff of Alas, Babylon, brought into the present this fall.
Plug away.
Some major network, yes. Okay, well, we go on that for a while, but...
But I want to add one more thing. Please. I also read the Book of Revelation as part of my studies. And,
right.
It's amazingly similar how we are predicting the flood, the starvation, the giant wars, and in the modern case over resources, but in general over the sort of the end of the world. And also the idea that there's a select group of people who understand what's going to happen, who somehow accept it, come to believe in it, and can save themselves and survive.
Okay, well, that's a strong parallel.
And may I add one more thing?
Please.
If you survive, the world will become somehow more beautiful and spiritual.
Okay. Well, that is a powerful parallel of metaphors. But I want to say that, and get your comment on, the fact that the Book of Revelation is essentially a faith-based document, whereas the discussion of peak oil has to do with very hard science and physics in the ground, even if the predictions and the projections are not an exact science. It is science. I'm wondering if it's a legitimate a comparison to compare science-based worries with faith-based worries.
I think that's true, and that's really a good point. The only thing I would add is that when it comes to what is going to happen 10 years from now,
right.
it is always, in a sense, a matter of faith. You make your choice, or you have your belief, but nobody really knows what's going to happen in 10 years from now.
Okay.
And there's some similarity there and the general issues of faith.
Okay.
But I think that's a very good point. I also feel if I thought about it a little more, I might have more to say on that.
Okay. Well, you have a chance. You maybe do another article or talk more. However, the specifics may be, they're not making any more oil, are they?
There isn't. That's kind of an interesting question. There are different places to get oil than there were before. People talk about the tar sands
But the tar sands take almost as much energy to make the to get the oil out as they yield.
It's a messy business, but it is essentially a net gain, and that's the bottom line.
Okay,
and there's a lot of it out there.
There is no mention that I could see in your article about China or India. Each with about a billion people, and each eager to start driving around as much as Americans.
Yes.
What impact is that going to have on
us? Well, there is one mention of that, which is that let us assume for a moment that they, let us not even consider their growth at this point. And I think that their growth is a major thing, and is going to, I think that's part of what's driving the price of oil up currently.
And it would also would tend to deplete the supply of oil even faster, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And they are going to have a hard time getting to where we are as easily as we did.
Okay.
And it's going to require a lot of creativity to figure out how to bring everyone up to a high standard of living.
Okay.
Everything can be done.
Right. I did an interview with Dr. David Goodstein a few weeks ago. He's a professor at Caltech, vice provost there, wrote a book called Out of Gas, The End of the Age of Oil.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Roughly.
Okay.
I haven't read that particular
I'll give you, you're going to be on the same channel with that interview, so maybe you have a chance to watch it. He was pretty... pessimistic about the possibility of replacing the current levels of consumption with biofuels or oil shale or other alternative and renewable energy sources. What's your take on the possibility of maintaining the current levels of energy consumption by substituting wind, solar, biofuels, and so on for the current sources?
Well, I think oil is popular because it's a great way to solve these problems. But that to me doesn't mean we can't fix things by or deal with what would potentially be a depletion. And there's a good argument to say that we have a long time to worry about oil depletion. Of course, peak oilers don't believe it, and it seems perfectly possible to me that we have hit the peak. I don't know. But I think the alternatives are probably going to be used here and there, and it's not going to be like we're going to develop a particular, you know, solar chip that's going to, you know, produce an unbelievable amounts of power. But I think we're going to kind of fix things up in a creative way, and I don't have an exact plan for that's going to how that's going to happen, and I wouldn't trust anyone who did. It comes down to kind of a general faith in the future. But by looking at the history of these movements and their discussions about how terrible things would get and how things that we didn't expect to happen actually happened, I feel fairly hopeful, although not unconcerned.
So fairly hopeful but not unconcerned is how you feel.
Yeah.
Do you think that now, most people, before your article came out, it seemed to me, most people in the general community had never heard of peak oil. And now they've heard of peak oil, but in the context of what you've said is a general optimism. Is that a conscious intention of yours, or you're just trying to?
I don't know if my piece is generally optimistic. I think these are serious problems that we have to deal with.
Right.
It is a major issue. I don't dispute that at all.
Okay.
And I think we need to be working steadily on how to solve it.
So in fact, you're saying we could have peaked already. These effects could take place.
Yeah. It would seem perfectly reasonable to me that we've hit a peak. On the other hand, it would also seem perfectly reasonable to me that production continues to increase for a while.
Right.
It's not an overnight thing.
Okay. And what are you recommending, if anything, for people as individuals to do in light of the ambiguity of whether there's a peak and what's going to happen afterwards, and what they ought to be doing in terms of getting their government to act in certain ways?
To me, it doesn't really matter whether there's a peak or not. We need to move away from burning quite so much oil in any
event. Right.
Because of global warming and such, it seems like a real issue. We need to think about ways to get around that don't involve large cars going long distances all the time, constantly. I think we can have a future with cars, but we need to have other options. It needs to be fairly easy to get on a train and go somewhere, which is a pleasant thing. I don't think that's... some people seem to think of trains as sort of, you know, this last-ditch thing, but, I like them.
People in Europe seem to enjoy them.
Yeah. They're great. I would say the thing to do is vote for people who are interested in that.
Okay, good. I want to thank you very much for talking to us today on Peak Oil Global Warming Channel.
Thank you.
Thank you.